Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
If you've got a green thumb, and by the way, if you do, I know a specialist. You'll really marvel at how simple a tool this is, and it can really save you hours of back-breaking work. Let's see. I'm about 100 yards off the green here. I'll try a five weasel. No more weeding on your hands and knees. You just gently glide your weasel. And by the way, it's been years since I've said that. You just glide the weasel in between your, let's say, plants. Look, Ma, I'm making valuable mulch. Oh. Hello, Mr. Hoffa. I hit Jimmy Hoffa. And the blades are removable for easy cleaning. And the patented tilling action digs deep into the soil and aerates all the way down to the roots. You know, here's something I don't understand. Weasels, aren't they rodents? Why would you name something after a rodent? I mean, think about it. It's not a nice thing. Why not just call it the Amazing Rat Stick?
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Andy's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a Kishka's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in demand.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. Jet stream. I'm sorry, I started laughing on Kishka. I'm like, what? That? You eat it? You don't sleep with it? Right.
You know, it's that time of not the year, but every 4 years, and I guess in honor of what I've been watching all week, I guess we got to play this, Dennis. Oh, here we go. You know, I've been watching the Olympics.
Oh, nice.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is the theme. They really should play this version, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. This opening is a ceremony every
this
year.
This is at least as good as some of the national anthems.
Yeah.
You know what? I've got a bone to pick about that. You know, I'm going to do my little rant here. I don't know if anybody else noticed. I don't like the arrangements of the national anthem. Sanders in the other room, he's laughing at me. It's like, of all the things to pick out, Sanders is saying, you don't like the arrangements? I mean, the musical arrangements. I don't like the musical arrangement of our national anthem.
So Francis Scott Key, the guy who made the thing, you just got a problem with the way
he's rolling over in his grave right now is what he is.
I think
of course,
so.
He could never imagine that that ridiculous song would ever become our national anthem anyway. But I just don't like the arrangement. I was listening to God Save the Queen last night. I didn't like the arrangement of that. I don't recognize the Chinese anthem. It's played enough. But I'm sure that if I did, I wouldn't like the arrangement of that either.
So what don't you like about it?
Here's what I'm thinking. I think they hired out to some guy or some woman. Somebody, they said, okay, we want all the national anthems to sound more or less the same. You got to have, it's got to be consistent. So they give, can you imagine? There's some person out there who had to put, what is it, 187 different national anthems together. How many, there's, or is it over 200? It's real close to 200. And somebody's got to arrange, do the arrangements for the national anthems, and then they're recorded, and then they play the recording. And you know, and it was so bad. The national anthem was so bad. The arrangement for the American national anthem was so bad that the American flag fell off.
Oh my!
Did you see that?
No.
When, oh gosh, I'm blanking. Williams, was it Serena? Is it her sister? It's either Venus or Serena. I can't remember which one. It's Serena, right? Okay, whatever. She's won everything in the world. Okay. And now she's got the special slam because she's got the Olympic gold now too. And then she's standing there on the podium, national anthem plays, the American and the other flags go up, and then the American flag just sort of fell off. And she said she responded very well. She said it's because it wanted to come over to her and hug her. That's what she said. That's not the reason. The reason was the arrangement of the national anthem was so bad that the flag just keeled over. That's what happened. All right, send your hate mail to Dennis.
Yeah, okay.
And Mike Sanders.
Yeah, we'll be taking all that one for you, bud.
Good morning. Hey, did your power go out last night?
No. Well, maybe. I don't know. I was asleep.
Sanders just gave me a report. His power's still out.
Yeah.
And our first guest power is out, too. She's on the cell phone because they have no power. Although I thought, didn't they used to work without power? Yours does? So you've got the landline. It still works. See, that's what I don't get. The lights are on and everything. So, see, the phone, my bell, just bypasses ComEd. They don't need, you see, this is what you got to understand. You can exist with, you know, Sanders, here's what you do. You take the cord out of your phone and you plug your refrigerator into the phone and it'll keep things cool. It'll keep going. He's giving me a thumbs up. So he's going to do that. No. In my house, I watched it come down and I was preparing for today's show and putting stuff together. And then it starts to pour. Like crazy. And I just thought, well, it's raining pretty good. The wind in our neck of the woods in Logan Square wasn't that bad. Unless somebody else got knocked out there. But in Logan Square, it was a good rain. It's good for the garden. Yay. And then it just kept raining and raining. And then I thought, I better check the basement. Sure enough, the water's bubbling up from the drain. In the center of the basement. Wow. I'm like, no, are you kidding me? Again? It's happened, I want to say, 4 or 5 times in the 11 years I've been there.
Oh, man.
Fortunately, the rain went through very quickly, and it slowed, and I was able to get, you know, the boxes on the floor, which you should never have in my basement. You do not put boxes on the floor unless they're plastic. Unless they're those, and if you listen to the show last week, that's bad too, because now we're creating more plastic. Beth Terry would be appalled. I wonder what she stores stuff in. You know, I didn't ask her. There were so many questions. And what a great conversation. If you folks didn't hear last week, Beth Terry, who wrote the book Plastic Free. And that's how I don't know about you, Denny. I spent the week buying plastic and then don't.
Yeah.
Doing the whole week, and that's one of the things that her conversation did for me. It pressed home just how much plastic is in the world, how much plastic we buy, and how do you get away from it?
That was a fantastic show last week.
Thank you.
How are people able to get last week's show, Mike?
Well, Denny, I think they can go to MikeNovak.net, click on podcasts, And there you go. It's going to be right there. In fact, I did a special edited version of my conversation with Beth Terry. And you can hear just that conversation. I even took out the commercials. How do you like them apples?
Oh, wow.
And I hope you buy her book, which is just amazing. Plastic free. But again, you know, and she tries to be really positive, and I appreciate the fact she's saying, no, we can do it. We can do it. You got to understand my character the way I think, which is, as I said, all darkness. So all I do is I go into the store and I see the plastic guy start tearing my hair out. Oh, I can't live in this world. Oh,
the dark mic rises.
What?
The dark mic rises. You like that?
Oh, that's the new name of the show. The Dark Mic Rises. I want that tweeted, Kathleen. I want that, all you folks on Twitter. The Dark Mic Rises is now the new name of the Mike Novak Show. On today's program, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. And Denny's right for doing my PR for me.
Anytime.
That's why we pay you the big bucks.
You know it.
And go to my website, MikeNovak.net, MikeNowak. I apologize for pronouncing my way the way my parents did. What idiots they were.
Always wondered that, by the way. Just kept it to myself. Always wondered that.
They were idiots. What did they know? And I have to spell it out because it is a W and not a V. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net, for podcasts. You can listen streaming live, and I've got the link at MikeNovak.net, or you can go to ChicagosProgressiveTalk.com. Like me on Facebook. Let's get some likes on Facebook today for the Mike Novak Show. Let's do that. We're closing in on 600, so I want to. Let's push it over the top today. I don't know that we can do that.
Almost 600, huh?
Almost 600.
Nice.
Should be 6,000, but we'll get there. I have delusions of grandeur. Do like me on Facebook. You can tweet, and we use Twitter a lot on the program. My handle is at Mike Now, MikeNow. The Dark Mic Rises.
I like that.
I like that.
I noticed you got that CTA shirt on today, too. That's
I
awesome.
Got my CTA shirt with the past CTA patch on the
that
side.
That is sweet.
Yeah. I'm going to start. You haven't seen my collection of name shirts. I've got a Bubba. I got a shirt with Bubba on it. Honest to goodness. I've got an Otis. I've got Ned. I got a bunch of shirts. I usually don't wear them in here, but I'll have to do that. It's an old tradition. I've hung on to those shirts, some of them, for, you know, 25 years. At some point, you realize you got to give them away. You got to give them the Salvation Army or something. And I'll say to Kathleen, no, not the Bubba shirt. No, we can't give that away. How often do you find a shirt with the name Bubba on it? No.
Where I'm from, Minnie.
Oh, well, in that case. Yeah, not where I was from. Stosh. You could get Stosh from my neck of the woods. All right. On the show today, I got to get to the phone and talk to Kirsten Aker, who's with Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse. They're doing their great event, An Evening in the Garden, next Thursday. I'll tell you all about that. Corrine Henry, who's from Angelic Organics Learning Center. You might have heard some of the announcements on this very radio station. I am the MC next Saturday at the 5th Annual Peak Harvest Farm Dinner. And that's out in Caledonia. We'll talk about that as well. Rick DeMaio weather at 9:45. And then in the second hour, something I haven't done in a while, but is still really important, very, very important, and that is what's happening with the proposed sand mine next to Starved Rock State Park. You're not reading about it in the press, folks, because it ain't there. Did a little search yesterday. Nobody's writing about it right now, but it's still going on. You know, they wait till it's a done deal and they go, oh, gee, oh, look at that. They put in a sand mine next. Oh, that's a shame they ruined that park. Well, you got to cover it as it's happening. At least that's what I'm trying to do. You can't cover everything, but this is too important for the people, the citizens of Illinois. They deserve better than that. And Tracy Yang, who's a clean water organizer from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club, will be here to bring us up to date. And a listener of mine, Stephen R. Penn, he's with a law firm called Penn Rakowski, and they are based in Racine and have done a lot of work with asbestos-related diseases, the inhalation problem with asbestos and other dust particles, including silica dust, which is going to be created by that open pit mine in next to Starved Rock. Not to mention the trucks going down the block, down the roads at all hours of the day, the noise, draining swamplands, covering over treasured artifacts. It's just so stupid. All right, I need to calm down. I'll save that for the second hour. So let's go to the phones and bring in my friend Kirsten Aker from Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse. Kirsten, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, Mike?
All right. Do you guys have power?
Absolutely no power. So I'm on my cell phone.
Holy smoke. Now I was just talking to Sanders, and Mike Sanders here, and he said, you know, his phone is going to, your landline's not working?
It's not working. I think it's because we have, I don't know what they're called, what are they called, the remote where you can walk around your apartment with the phone?
Oh, the
so
cordless.
It doesn't work.
You know, remember? Do you remember when cordless was the most advanced technology?
That's what it was.
Wow.
Yeah. Is my phone working for you?
Oh, it's working great. You sound wonderful.
Okay. Good, because you're coming in and out. But yeah, those were really great phones, but they don't work during power outages. So
I like that idea that you're coming in great, but you know we've got the big radio station, and I'm speaking into a microphone, and we're sending it down the big wires, and I'm coming in and out to you.
Exactly.
Oh dear. No, it's not our fault. It's your fault. It's your phone.
It is my phone.
But I can hear you just fine. So if
excellent.
If I say something and you can't hear it. Just let me know and I'll repeat it. All right.
I will. Yeah, definitely.
Great event coming up. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're really excited. We've never done this before. And it all started with a conversation of a chef who was working with us at an event. And he said, we should put on a fundraiser and I will cook all the food from ingredients from your garden.
Woo-hoo!
And yeah. So all of a sudden, 2 years later, we are doing it and we're very excited. We're considering it kind of a celebration of a very fun and successful and busy summer. So we're looking forward to it here at Kilbourne Park.
Fabulous. And I got to tell you, I had you on the show several months ago, just before mm-hmm. you did your annual plant sale.
Yeah.
I got some great stuff. You should see our several tomatoes are just rocking in our community garden. We've got ground cherries. We've been harvesting.
Yeah.
Ground cherries, yeah. Tomatillos.
They're so delicious. Yeah, the tomatillos doing wonderful.
And borage. We got some borage for you, and I did that as companion plant.
Yeah.
The problem is one of the borages got completely swallowed up. I planted it too close to another tomato plant, and of course the tomato plant just engulfed it.
It's, exactly.
I know, and it's still there, but it's still alive. It's just buried under this tomato plant.
Yeah,
so
fun.
Yeah, it is. And so you grow wonderful stuff at Kilbourne Park, and you're going to use some of it in the dishes that you're serving this Thursday, right?
This Thursday, yeah. We harvested garlic earlier this year. That'll be used. We're going to use Swiss chard from the garden, kale from the garden, some onions from the garden. We harvested a lot of currants, and I had an incredible volunteer who made it into a syrup, and we're going to be doing some sparkling sodas with our own syrup.
Mm-hmm.
We have our grapevines are producing, and so we're going to have fresh grapes from the garden, and so some of our peppers and tomatoes. So we're going to have most of the ingredients from the garden. We may need to supplement it a bit from the farmer's market, so we're at the Green Cities Farmer's Market.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really exciting. But I have to tell you, one of the things about the storm that always cracks me up, and the reason we're doing this event is we want to improve the infrastructure of the greenhouse for our organic plant sale, but also for our programming. So with all of these storms, our greenhouse is doing fine. There's no problems with the greenhouse structure itself. But what we really, really, really want, and this is what this event's going to help us do, is we're going to get fans for the main greenhouse. It's a big greenhouse where we do all of our programming for our kids. We're going to get fans, and that with these 105-degree temperatures over the summer, to have fans in the greenhouse is going to make a big, big difference.
You have no fans in the greenhouse right now?
I have been able to, through small fundraising efforts, like at our events, to get fans for both of our small greenhouses. But our main greenhouse, we have, as you know, we need a new roof. So there's very, very low light. But we have absolutely no fans. So on these hot days and on the hot spring days, that greenhouse, the temperature can get really high and there's no way to vent the air out. So that'll be our main priority, is to get those fans for that inside greenhouse so that we have wind and air circulation for our plants, for the plant sale, but also for us and for the kids that are involved in our programs. It's going to probably reduce air temperatures quite dramatically on these hot days and really make it more comfortable throughout the year to be in that space.
I can't imagine why it gets warm in a greenhouse. It's just glass, you know.
I know. Yeah, exactly. Why would it get hot?
Exactly. It's, you know, glass on the ceiling, glass on the sides. It's 103 outside. So do you have a thermometer in there?
I wish I did. No, it broke a few years ago, and I don't have one. But during those really hot days, I swear, we called it our free sauna. We'd come in, and you would, yeah, it's been kind of the sweaty summer at Kilbourne Park when you go in the greenhouse.
Yeah, because I wonder how high it's actually gotten in there, how high the temperature has gotten.
I was curious, but I was actually a little afraid to know.
I can imagine, because it must be a danger to all living creatures walking in the door. So, but you know what's really kind of interesting about that greenhouse, and if you haven't seen it, folks, you need to go up to Kilbourne Park, and your address is
3501 North Kilbourne. So we're just south of Addison and close to Milwaukee.
And it's one of those few old-time greenhouses left in the city. It's certainly in a park district. I guess many of them just got demolished over the years. And for some, why did this one survive?
It's a good question. I mean, I think one of the reasons is the Garfield Park, the two conservatories, Garfield Park and Lincoln Park, for many years, I think maybe from the 50s to the early 90s, they were using it to store the azalea crops. So that would have been Garfield Park. So the conservatory still used it to have some of their plants. When they stopped using it, it got filled up with weeds, and the community were either, some of them wanted it torn down, but luckily Friends of the Parks and some other organizations and some people within the park district said, no, let's save this.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing about that is in the mid-90s when they decided to save it, that's when they decided to make it an educational center focusing on organic gardening.
You know, it's a wonder that any buildings anywhere in America survived the 50s, 60s, and 70s. Just,
yeah.
That was the whole MO and during those decades was, tear it down. It's old. It's old. Get rid of it.
Exactly. And I think that after working at this greenhouse for 6 years, I'm now passionate about, I can't leave this place till I get this greenhouse renovated so it can serve future generations.
And you have a really interesting idea about replacing the glass.
Yeah.
Roof. You want to get, well, explain what you want to do with that.
Well, our fiberglass roof, which they replaced in the 60s, is, you know, now over 60 years old, and it filters out 80% of the light. So it's my biggest challenge in this greenhouse. But what I would like to do is, Garfield Park Conservatory's greenhouse was devastated last year by the hail. And it was all of the greenhouses that hadn't been renovated. So eventually those greenhouses are going to be renovated and replaced with glass. But right now they have a temporary polycarbonate roof that is their temporary cover. Once those come off the Garfield Park Conservatory, I would love to see those brought to Kilbourne Park to be reused, to be our new roof. And so they would only be 2 to 3 years old. And if we could do that, it would make me so happy to be, you know, I'm a big recycler and reuser, and if I could figure out how to reuse that polycarbonate. So people within the park district were taking measurements and looking into the possibility. So in some ways, the fundraising efforts for the Garfield Park Conservatory roof is directly tied in with my wanting this new roof. If we can gather enough funds to do that roof, the faster that happens, the faster I might get my polycarbonate.
And that's a reason to go to the Garfield Park Conservatory website and donate to their renovation so that
Absolutely.
You will get the temporary roof.
Exactly. We're kind of tied, and it's kind of funny because I started out working at Garfield Park Conservatory with the Alliance for 5 years before I'm going to Kilbourne Park. So I find it a really fascinating connection. And so, therefore, I'm just really happy about us having our first fundraising event to try to just put in the infrastructure for the greenhouse with these fans so we can be ready at any time when the Park District has that polycarbonate ready for us. So that's my big thing. But one other thing I want to mention about this fundraiser is, you know, at Kilbourne Park, I have this tremendous team of volunteers, and my work could not be done without this incredibly tireless, hardworking, energetic crew of volunteers. And one of the things is our programs are really, we do a lot of after school, a lot of preschool, a lot of summer camp. But what we're developing this summer, and we're just starting, is what we're calling the Explorer's Garden. And it's on the public side of the greenhouse. And if we have enough funds after doing the fans, the next project we're going to tackle is this interactive play structure in this very public part of the garden. And our idea is to create a boat-shaped garden with so that kids can kind of pretend to row a boat, but in the front and the back will be planted with plants. And so we're really excited about trying to make that happen as well.
All right, well, before I let you go, very quickly, let's talk about, again, the evening, an evening at the garden this Thursday, mm-hmm. August 9th, 6 to 8 p.m., Kilbourne yeah. Park Organic Greenhouse. You can go there and you can see for yourself why you need to raise some funds to replace the ceiling, the roof, whatever you're calling it.
Yeah.
And Chef Jeff Adamic?
Adamic.
Yep, Adamic. Right.
And Jennifer Templeton is the pastry chef. They'll be making different appetizers from our food from the garden, which will be awesome. We'll have live music, so it'll be a beautiful time of hearing some acoustic jazz guitar. And we'll also have some wonderful refreshments from Half Acre Brewery, Virtue Cider, and even some Southern Illinois wines to try.
Wow. And they let you do that on park property, huh?
We have the permit. We have the insurance. We're all set.
And I know that, you know, doing the whole park district thing is like jumping through hoops of fire sometimes. But you know what it's like. You're a city employee. So
And it's worth it because we can really touch a lot of people. So, you know, the event is $40 for adults, $20 for kids. We highly recommend people going onto Brown Paper Tickets. And if you like us on Facebook, on Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse, you can get all the information on there and see a little bit more about our programs. I have some awesome interns that have been taking pictures all summer and posting them on Facebook. So make sure people can go onto Facebook, get the information on the event, and see some great pictures of what we're doing at the greenhouse over the summer.
Yeah, and all that information is on my website, mikenovak.net, including linking to Brown Paper Tickets, where I'm a full service radio show here, all right? We do it all. It's all there. Link to the event and to your website, the Kilbourne Park Organic mm-hmm. Greenhouse, and it's all there. And as Kirsten said, $40, great cause. It's in the neighborhood, in the hood in Chicago, up at Addison and Kilbourne, and I think you're going to really have fun.
Yeah, and one thing that I want to mention is if you buy tickets at the door, you can do that, but we're increasing the price a little bit so we can try to get some kind of good count on numbers. So it's $45 at the door for adults, $25 at the door for kids. So if you want a last minute, you can come and join us. It looks like it's going to be a beautiful night, but you'll pay a little bit so that we can, you know, since we won't know until you arrive.
And it's going to be beautiful weather, I'm guaranteeing. No storms.
I agree. I think so, because Saturday I had to laugh right before I was leaving. The storm hit, and I watched our tent that we've been using all summer fly and tumble. This isn't easy, a tent. Fly and tumble across the garden. I was like, uh-oh.
Yikes. All right. Well, stop by this evening.
Shape.
Yeah, and it's a great cause. And Kirsten, as always, a pleasure. I hope you get your power back soon.
I do too, but you have a great weekend. Hope to see you at the event.
You betcha. All right, thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And in just a second, we go to event number two, the one I'm going to be emceeing out in beautiful Caledonia, Illinois, on Saturday. Stick around for that. Now, the ultimate summer sale is now in progress at Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village neighborhood. Here's all you need to know. They have a boatload of many new fresh shrubs, annuals, and perennials and a tremendous collection of plants and pottery on sale for 50 to 75% off, plus clearance 4-inch annuals for 99 cents. Now is the time to mulch. Well, it's always a good time to mulch, especially this summer due to the extreme heat and lack of precipitation. Christy Weber has a bunch of new and, yes, exciting mulches. I know Denny's excited. He's jumping around there in the booth. He's very excited about mulch. Come pick up a few bags today. Your plants will thank you for it. Oh, and remember, they deliver. Do you like shrubbery? Monty Python did. Gorgeous new specimens have arrived from Sheridan Nursery. Loads of lovely spirea, including neon flash. They also have hydrangeas, arborvitae, junipers, boxwoods, euonymus, hardy hibiscus, and much more. Go to ChristyWeber.com and click on Garden Center. Have you liked Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center on Facebook yet? Well, do it right now. Or just stop by at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village. Look for the explosion of color.
Hot, dry summers are hard on our lawns and landscapes. Use Milorganite fertilizer to help your lawn and landscape survive the stressful summer season. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. The organic nitrogen in Milorganite is slow release and non-burning, even during drought. The fertilizer will be in place and ready to work when better growing conditions and moisture return, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% iron promotes deep green growth. Milorganite, for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Good morning to this beautiful Sunday. Sorry if you don't have power. I got water in my basement. I have power. In fact, I'm using the power to run the dehumidifier down there right now to get that sludge off the basement floor. As you know, Deep Tunnel does empty into my basement. So that's, and they're working on that. See if they can get that fixed. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Corrine. And Corrine Henry is the Director of Development and Communications with Angelix Organics Learning Center. Good morning, Corrine.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Good. Now, I got to make sure I'm pronouncing this correctly because I once knew a Corrine, but she said her name was pronounced Corrine. How's yours pronounced?
That's me, too. It's Corrine.
Okay, Corrine. Sorry.
No, that's okay.
You know, if you say Novak, I'll say Corrine. I understand you have a storm story, too.
Yes, I do. We had a large tree fall on our home yesterday, and luckily everyone's okay, but it broke a window, and it was kind of a scary experience.
Whoa.
Pretty crazy. Yeah, but we're okay, so feeling lucky.
Yeah, I'm so sorry to hear that. And where? Where are you located?
I am in Edgewater.
Wow. You know, it's interesting as different parts of the city really got hammered and other parts. I was sitting out there and aside from the heavy rain in Logan Square, the winds didn't seem all that bad to me.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But you'll pull the tree off the house, pull it out of the window, and then get ready for next Saturday evening.
Yeah, we're really excited for our event next weekend. And as far as I know, everything is okay at the farm. So we are good to go. And hopefully the rain is out of our system so that we'll have a nice, beautiful day for the dinner.
And it's your fifth annual.
The
fifth annual Peak Harvest Farm Dinner. in Caledonia at Angelic Organics Farm, and it benefits Angelic Organics Learning Center. And you know, and over the last several years, you guys have been really good to me, and I appreciate that. You've helped me line up guests for the show. Martha Boyd is a regular contributor to the program, and I'm happy to give back to you and be the MC. What do you want me to do? Do I have to sing or dance?
No, no singing and dancing required, although you can if you'd like to. That would make the event really exciting, I think. People might be interested in seeing that.
I might have to fire up the karaoke machine and bring it with me.
That would be awesome. We will have some music there, so you can get up on stage with the musicians, and we'll just have a great time.
But this is really a big deal for you guys. You've got some of the top chefs in the city who are participating in this. Why don't you tell me about some of them?
Yeah, so we have a number of chefs. I think the thing that brings them all together is that they're really all committed to supporting local farmers and serving local ingredients in their restaurants and their catering companies. So that's, you know, why they're involved. This meal is really based on the local system, local food system. Obviously, that is behind everything we do. So we have Mark Bernard of Big Bowl. You're probably familiar with them. They do Chinese and Thai food. They are doing a number of Asian-inspired hors d'oeuvres for our cocktail hour. They'll have some pickled vegetables and things like that. They're using all of the produce from Angelic Organics Farm. So that should be really awesome. Molly Johnson of Callahan Catering is doing a sweet corn bisque with basil pesto and heirloom tomatoes and a charred corn salad. Doesn't that sound amazing?
Yeah.
So good. And then Nathan Chappell of Rushing Waters Fisheries is doing a smoked local trout. He represents one of the few local trout farms in the area. It's actually in Wisconsin. So we'll be featuring that. He's using some arugula and fennel and onion and dill from the farm as well in his dish. And then we have the Amazing Chefs of Sunday Dinner. They're doing a grilled steak with garlic chili vinaigrette, glass noodles, eggplant, and sweet peppers, cucumbers, and pickled onions. And then we'll have William Harriman from Angelic Organics Farm doing a seasonal fruit Napoleon featuring melon and custard made from local eggs and cream.
Yikes.
So it's going to be an amazing meal, and it truly is the peak of harvest season at the farm. Everything is in season right now. You know, we have the amazing sweet corn and heirloom tomatoes and all those wonderful, precious things that only happen once a year. So
hey, while you're on the subject of sweet corn, let me ask you about that. I mean, how have you done with the sweet corn crop? Corn in Illinois has been iffy at best. Is that from the farm there?
Yep, it's from the farm. Our corn crop is doing pretty well. You know, all things considered, obviously it's a difficult year for a lot of farmers, but we've been able to maintain our CSA operation and, you know, give, you know, full boxes going out every week to our shareholders. So we're really pleased about that. So really nothing too out of the ordinary in terms of what we're getting. It's just kind of more work involved in making it happen this year, I think, is the big thing.
Let me ask you a question about doing an organic farm in a drought like this. How are things different from what would they call traditional farming in terms of staying ahead of the drought?
Right. We're spending a lot of money on irrigation systems this year. We're just I'm not too intimately involved in the farm operation, so I'm probably not the best person to talk about this, but I do know that it's just a lot more expensive for us to irrigate and supply all that water, and it takes longer and more time. I mean, you know, organic farming is a really labor-intensive effort. We have crews out there every day working in the heat, and they work so hard, and it's just a big effort, and it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, I mean, and this is what you pay for. You know, if your organic produce is a little more expensive. I think it's worth it, for one thing, for not to be subjected to pesticides. And the others, yeah, it is a little more labor intensive, and that's the nature of the beast. And this is also why you have things like the 5th Annual Peak Harvest Farm Dinner Benefit, so that you can keep this organization going. And the point is, with the Angelic Organics, it's not just the farm, it's the learning center, where you reach more than 4,000 people each year through all kinds of different programs, teaching farmers how to, you know, teaching young farmers, new farmers. I've had some of those farmers on the show here through you guys. And it's just amazing to talk to them and the things they learn and the joy they get out of learning how to farm.
Yeah, so that's a big part of our programming, is helping to train and support beginning farmers. We've helped more than 100 farmers launch their businesses over the past 7 years. So that's something that we're really proud of. Obviously, the local food system throughout the region is really growing, and more people are getting involved in organic farming. And we've really been kind of behind that movement and making it happen. We also offer hands-on workshops and programs, educational programs for youth and for adults at our farm. We offer urban agriculture programs in Chicago and Rockford. Actually, at the dinner itself, we'll be really featuring and celebrating our work in Rockford, where we're serving about 150 youth each year that are learning hands-on skills in urban agriculture. We have a crew of youth leaders who are serving as mentors to younger kids and becoming leaders all through the gardening work that they're doing.
Well, the event is this Saturday, August 11th. I'm going to be the MC. It's from 5 to 8 p.m. at 1547 Rockton Road in Caledonia, beautiful Caledonia, Illinois. But the cool thing is that if you're a Chicagoan and you're more comfortable being downtown, guess what? There's a shuttle bus to the farm from Big Bowl.
Yeah, so Big Bowl is doing a really awesome pre-event reception. They'll have hors d'oeuvres and cocktails available. You can hang out there for about an hour and then hop on the bus. We'll take you out to the farm and get you there just in time to enjoy the cocktail hour at our event and sit down and have a beautiful meal, and then we'll take you back as well. So it's all inclusive. You can just sort of sit back and relax and let us take care of you for the evening.
That's great. It's, you know, instead of like going to the Bears game or something, you're going to eat. So it's all about eating for about 6 hours.
Yeah, if you like relaxing and eating and experiencing a beautiful farm, it's just an incredible time to be out there on the farm. You'll kind of get a taste of what's happening on the farm at this time of year. And obviously the wonderful meal, learn a little bit more about our programs. We're going to be showing a short video and having some of our participants from that Rockford program give a little sort of presentation. So you'll get a really great taste of what we're doing.
Well, it's a fabulous event. All the information is on my website, mikenovak.net. You can go there and get a link to the benefit and how to get tickets and some of the stuff that's going to be there. Or you can go to learngrowconnect.org and get all the information there, too. You've heard the things, the PSAs on this station, and I hope folks who have been listening will come out and say hi and have some great food. And I'm really looking forward to it, Corinne.
Thank you so much, Mike. We're excited to have you there. And I should note that tickets are going fast. We have I just did a count, 14 available still. So if you're interested in attending, definitely purchase tickets before they're gone.
All right, countdown, 14 left. Get on board right now. Go to the website and make your reservation. Corinne, I will see you on Saturday.
Thank you so much. We can't wait.
And good luck with the tree.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, dear. Tree falls on the house. Yeah, well, we'll talk to Rick DeMaio about that in just a sec.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees and the Morton Arboretum. Fall can be a good time to plant many species of trees, and now is the time to plan for that. When you do, think about diversity. In the past, we have seen serious problems arise when we have too many of the same trees in the landscape. Dutch elm disease was able to spread rapidly because elms were so widely planted. Emerald ash borer has become a major problem quickly since ash trees are abundant in the landscape, and many of those replace the elms. Do you see a pattern here? Several years ago, the U.S. National Arboretum proposed a 10-20-30 formula, which suggests planting no more than 10% of a single tree species, no more than 20% of species within any tree genus, and no more than 30% of the species within any tree family within a given area. Now, if you can't follow that, here's a simple rule. See what trees your neighbors have in their yard and then plant something else. And invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220, 847-394-4220, The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Rick DeMaio weather in 30 seconds.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
And now, our very own gold medal winner in the
meteorological community.
The meteorological, I was going to say, like the meteorological relay.
Like we're all passing around weather maps? Is that
exactly, something like that. Well, I don't know.
Here's the 5-day.
Rick DeMaio, how are you doing, Rick?
Good. Enjoying this fresh, crisp northwest flow with dew points in the upper 50s. And as my mother used to say, Mike, the angels washed the skies last night.
And they did. I have to admit.
They used a lot of water, didn't they?
How much did we get?
You know, it all depends. 0.37 at Fishey at O'Hare, 0.45 at Rockford. So, again, the northern suburbs kind of got cheated. And amazingly enough, the same quarter that's basically got hit with some of the micro heavy rainfall events over the last 2 months, or last 2 weeks rather, got nailed pretty good. Aurora 1.55, there were some parts of the area that got over 2 inches right through central areas of Grundy County and Will County, and of course southern areas of Cook County. And it seemed like it rained about a foot and a half down at Grand Park yesterday. But the rain came fast. It came furious. There was some wind gusts anywhere between 50, 60, and 70 miles per hour. I know a lot of people were upset that, you know, the event handlers, you know, basically postponed the concert yesterday at Grand Park and then brought him back in. But, Mike, I've never seen a large-scale event like that organized so well, understanding what the threat was. And what the potential danger could be and where the people should go, and the fact that they were able to get back in there with all those lightning strikes around and wind gusts over 60 miles per hour. I think the event handlers should really give themselves a pat on the back, as well as the National Weather Service. It shows that when information is disseminated in the proper way and in the right format to the right people, and it doesn't have to go through all these different filters, and the main point is, you know, people's security and well-being involved as the number one priority, things work out well. So overall, the rains came, they left, and we have a nice, beautiful, sunny day today.
Now, I will echo that. Kudos to the organizers of the event for being ready to pull the trigger on getting people out of there. And they were able to get them back in, I understood.
Right.
It took a little longer to get them back in, but that's
it
not...
It always does.
Yeah.
I'm always going to say, I didn't get to see what I wanted to see. But I think, by and large, most people, I thought, you know, were probably pretty good about it, knowing that lightning is the number one killer relating to thunderstorms, and you basically had a lot of sitting ducks there. And the fact that everybody was able to get out safely was, you know, was a good thing.
Where did they go?
They actually had three... there was a story in the Tribune Wednesday about it. I didn't read it totally, but I was talking to someone from the Weather Channel, and they did a short piece on it, I think, Thursday morning. They actually had three underground, I believe, security areas, so to say, that I think were parking garages. I'm not too sure about this. But the fact that they actually stopped the shows, you know, almost 15 to 20 minutes before the weather was coming, granted, it was pretty easy to predict, and, you know, in an orderly fashion got people out of there, showed that you can actually, you know, move large masses of people, and they've always worried about this. The number one concern of the Weather Service is, what do you do when you have a big area of thunderstorms moving into Grant Park? Because there's only one way for people to go, and that's west. It's not like you can go east into the lake. So this is a very, very difficult situation for them, I should say more or less challenging. And they think they came through in flying colors. And I know we want to talk a lot about how the weather is affecting agriculture. But I want to ask you a quick question. I didn't get to listen to you off the top of the show, but have you mentioned the lack of the Farm Bill not passing in Congress this past week?
No.
Okay, well, obviously that's a bill that was designed to help drought-stricken farmers across the Midwest. It obviously expires at the end of August. It's a four-year bill that went into effect 2008. It expires the end of August 2012. But the fact that the bill was actually passed through the House Agricultural Committee, which is obviously Republican-controlled, but didn't even get past a Republican-controlled Congress because, A, they want $35 billion in cuts, which is fine. I know we have to cut a lot of fat from the federal government, but they also want to cut $16 billion in food stamps. And the Democrat-controlled Senate said, you know what, we'll go with $23 billion in cuts and $4 billion in food stamps. And because they couldn't agree, the bill died, and now they're not going to revisit this bill until probably early September. In the meantime, what's going to happen to all these farmers that are trying to get some of their drought relief, you know, coming towards them? It looks like they may have to wait maybe another 4 to 6 or maybe even 8 weeks for some of those checks in the mail. And that's really a sad state of affairs when you really think about the fact that these are people who are not Democrats or Republicans. They're farmers. They're actually putting food in the ground for us to use to sustain life in areas we can't even actually get a bill passed to help them out.
Yeah, it is amazing, and I was reading a little bit about that yesterday, the idea was that, you know, the Senate passed their version of the bill back at the end of June,
all right?
And it went to the House, and as you said, made it through the Agriculture Committee.
Right.
So all had to be done is brought out on the floor, but no, that didn't happen. So what happened, from what I read, was that they brought up a stopgap measure and said, well, let's pass this instead. And, you know, I actually kind of understand that the Senate would say, no, we passed a comprehensive bill. If you can't get your job done, we're not even going to look at this. But as you mentioned, Rick, who pays for it? The farmers do, because now they're stuck while these clowns in the Congress are on vacation.
Right. Five-week recess.
Yeah, you know, and I hope those people go back to those farm districts and get hammered. And when those farmers say, well, what did you do for us? What did you get passed?
Right.
Nothing.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty sad. And it's not like in the farming community, you go out there one day and everything is bad. It's been getting bad for a while. I mean, these people just, this is one of those type of industries where you live in your job. Your farmhouse is basically on the crop that you see, and you go, oh, my God, look at it. Again, there's nothing growing. Now, granted, we've gone past the point of no return here, but it does say a lot about how things are working in Washington. And, you know, both sides, I guess, to some degree can be at fault, but in a situation like this, this is a historic drought. I think back to what George Will said on This Week with George Stephanopoulos about 3 weeks ago. It's summer. Deal with it. I hope that some some people kind of go back to him and say, deal with what? This is the worst drought in probably 25 years to hit much of the country, and look what's happening here.
Yeah.
Anyway, so just to go back quickly, weather-wise, some areas, again, about 1 to 2 inches of rain, but Mike, the best thing about this pattern is that outside of maybe an errant 90-degree day coming up maybe on Wednesday, I really see this pattern beginning to break down. I don't see anything in the way of extreme heat or humidity coming back at us for probably the next 15 to 18 days as the pattern goes into a northwest flow. And even though we're stuck on number 39, the 39th day above 90 degrees, I would be very, very confident to say that we may go through at least the 19th of August, that's the next 3 weeks, or the next 2 weeks, rather, without a 90-degree day here in Chicago. So some relief from the heat, some relief from the rain here in Cook County, but it's still parts of central Illinois and southern Illinois down around 7 to 10 inches. And it's almost ex post facto. The farmers down there know that their corn crop is done. Now it's a matter of figuring out what can they get out of it over the next 4 to 5 weeks.
Very quickly, how far south did this rain occur?
Basically, it was from about Bloomington northward to about Rockford. So even places like Pontiac, which got a decent amount of rain, they're down about 7 inches. Kankakee is down about 8, but the real worst part of the state is pretty much from about Peoria all the way down to Cape Girardeau, Missouri, which is basically southern tip of Illinois. Those areas have seen probably less than twice the amount of rainfall that we haven't seen here. In other words, they're down about 12 inches, and they've also seen much, much hotter temperatures. So while we've seen 4 days above 100 here in Chicago, St. Louis is up to 16 days, and in parts of southern Illinois and Missouri and even areas of southern Indiana, their weather has been much hotter and much drier, and that's pretty much where the disaster is basically what we would call ground zero.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I don't care if we break the 90-degree record.
And you know what? There's a pretty good chance we may not. As hot as it's been early in the summer, I think the next 3 weeks around here actually look pretty cool. So some good news there.
Any TV coming up?
I'll be back on Channel 2 next Sunday. I had to take a little bit of time off because I pulled my back, so I was unfortunately not able to assist you in the canoe yesterday.
I wasn't able to go either, unfortunately.
You were.
Canoes
okay,
for a cause, the Line of Kugel folks, and I got to find out how well it went. I really don't even have the information on that.
It's tough to canoe and hold a beer at the same time.
Yeah, it is. All right, Rick DeMaio, weather. You can go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net. We will talk again next week, Rick.
Talk to you, Mike.
No. That wasn't the one I wanted. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Operator error. Let's pretend we just did the ID and then we hit this.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
One way or another, I'm gonna find you. I'm gonna get you one way or another.
See, I believe in full disclosure. And when I screw it up, I want the whole world to know. It's like, no hiding from it. It's like, I played that song earlier. This is the one I wanted. I got to be like Superman. I got to figure out how to go back in time. Da, na, 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 you know, and spin the world back.
Now your Dark Mike rises now. Come on, not Superman.
The Dark Mike rises. Love it. Okay. Welcome back to the second hour of the Mike Novak Show. We're going to get into a conversation here about Starved Rock State Park in just a sec. If you're interested in being part of that conversation, give us a call, 773-763-9278. 773-763-9278. I was talking about events in the first hour of the show, a couple of events. Of course, the an evening at the garden at Kilbourne Park Organic Greenhouse. That's this Thursday. Information is on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. Lots of food, lots of fun, live music, etc. Of course, then next Saturday, the 5th annual Peak Harvest Farm Dinner Benefit at Angelic Organics Learning Center. Or it benefits Angelic Organics Learning Center at Angelic Organics Farm in Caledonia. I am the MC for that, and I hope you will join us there. But another thing that's going on is the 11th annual, and this is next week, the 11th annual Illinois Renewable Energy and Sustainable Lifestyle Fair at the Ogle County Fairgrounds in Oregon, Illinois, or maybe they pronounce it Oregon, Illinois. I don't know. It's sponsored by the Illinois Renewable Energy Association, Saturday from 9 to 6, Sunday 9 to 5, and great workshops and booths, seminars. Keynote presenters will be Paul Fenn, speaking about local power, Fred Kirschman, redesigning the human adventure, challenges and opportunities, and John Perlin, history of solar homes in the Midwest, and other great thing. So that information is also on my website, mikenovak.net, this week's show. So let us go to the phones now. Okay. I go to line two to bring in Tracy Yang, who's the clean water organizer with the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Okay. And you're kind of stepping into the shoes of another member of the Illinois Sierra Club, and that would be Tess Wendell, right?
Yes, I am. I'm basically taking over all the projects that she was working on.
But where's she moving on to?
She moved back to Washington, actually.
D.C. or state? Oh, Seattle.
Yeah.
Wonderful state. I can't say that... That's a bad choice.
Yeah, definitely.
I know. I love Seattle. Love the Pacific Northwest. Love Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, actually, that's where I'm from. So,
really?
Yeah, so I'm definitely a little bit jealous that she's going back out there, but I'm very happy for her.
I did some work out in Portland. I had a vacation house in the Pacific Northwest on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. I tell people that I think Portland is the best-kept secret in America. And I shouldn't say that because then people start to move there. And I know you guys don't. Didn't you guys have that campaign in Oregon at one point where it's like, you Californians, go back home. We don't want you.
I mean, and I think that actually there have been a lot of people coming to Portland right now, especially after the economy first kind of took a fall, and we kind of saw an influx of people from other cities coming to Portland.
Despite the Portlandia show, and there's some truth to that, but obviously it's way, way over the top. And let me bring in also right now wait a second. Did I do that right? Are you still with me, Tracy?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Is our other guest? Oh, he's not there.
No, that's not the other guy. I'll contact the other guest now. Sorry, we had a caller. I was chatting it up there.
Oh, did I just hang up on the caller?
No, not at all.
Okay. You never know what I'm going to do here with these buttons. Well, let's start with you, Tracy. We've been following this issue on this show, and it's been it pops up from time to time in the local media, and that is the attempt by a company called Mississippi Sand LLC to put an open pit sand mine next to the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. If anybody's listening for the first time here, you might say, but those of you who are regulars understand what we're talking about here. You sent me a letter from the Illinois chapter of Sierra Club that sort of outlines the situation and where it stands right now. I know that you and other environmental organizations have been trying to work with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources to get hearings on this. But one of the things that has happened is that IDNR's Office of Mines and Minerals, which has a hand in approving this, sent the company a bond and fee letter. It approved Mississippi Sands mining permit on June 15th. So with that in mind, where do we stand? What are the next steps?
So when DNR issued the bond and fee letter, you know, I think this is kind of a tricky situation because officially DNR has not approved this application. You know, contrary to what it might seem, the issuance of this bond and fee letter does not finalize anything at this point. So basically, we're waiting to see what Mississippi Sand is going to do. When they send in their bond and fee, though, this will in itself trigger an issuance of approval from DNR, which is it's kind of frustrating. But
all right, let's stop right there because you're saying a couple of things here, one of which that you're frustrated because it seems like I look at this and I say, well, what if they send the bond and fee, we're done here, right? Don't we just move forward? And yet other information I have indicates that there are people who say that it's that DNR might not have done due diligence at this point, investigated this as much as they could have. Where does Sierra Club stand on that?
The Sierra Club definitely agrees with that they have not done their due diligence. I mean, there's a lot of things that we have been trying to get DNR to cooperate to send us. You know, for instance, we recently FOIA'd the Freedom of Information Act allows us to request the findings and public documents that are surrounding DNR's quote, you know, extensive short and long-term analysis of this project. And we were unfortunately denied, and the reasoning behind it from that we got from DNR is because they have not officially approved the application. And they haven't, because they haven't officially approved it, we don't have a right to request these documents because they haven't been basically formulated yet.
You see, now that, to me, sounds like sleight of hand. It's we're not going to be transparent to begin with. And then if you ask us to be transparent, we're going to say, well, no, we can't really tell you that because we haven't formally approved it. And then what happens is they formally approve it and then you send the information and then they get to say, well, we'll give you the information, but it's a done deal.
Right.
It's like it's heads I win, tails you lose. It sounds like to me.
Right. Exactly. And that's I think that's where a lot of our frustrations are kind of stemming from. Like that's one of the main issues that we have.
And that leads us to what role IDNR has in this. And I've talked about it in the past on the show, but I will remind people that they not only are mandated to deal with, through their Office of Mines and Minerals, deal with these companies that want to extract resources from the land, but they're also tasked with protecting our natural resources, i.e. Starved Rock State Park. Now, I ran into Mark Miller, who is the director of IDNR. There was a ceremony a couple of weeks ago, where Governor Quinn signed the No Landfills Bill in Cook County. There was a ceremony on the south side, and the governor signed the bill, and Mark Miller was there. So I went up to Mark. I said, hey, Mark, what's going on? And we talked about this a little bit, and I said, you know, it seems like your problem is you're trying to serve two masters, and you really can't do that. Or at least it doesn't seem like it's being done well, because right now it seems like Starved Rock State Park is getting short shrift in this whole deal. Is that the way Sierra Club feels about it?
Yes, completely. The duality of their role in this is definitely something that is hampering them. And, you know, you can formulate your own opinion of how you think they're leaning. And it's pretty obvious that DNR is not able to fulfill both roles in this issue.
Yeah, and that's part of the deal, too. And I wrote some things on my website, which you can look at if they go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. And sometimes you have to say, well, that's my opinion. You know, because their official policy would be, no, we're doing everything we can. The problem is, even the Attorney General's office of the state of Illinois is telling IDNR, no, you really haven't done your job yet. We don't know why you sent you approved the permit, because due diligence hasn't been done on this matter. Is that correct?
Yeah, I know that the AG has sent the Illinois Natural Preserves Council and the Endangered Species Protection Board both letters, as well as DNR, kind of talking about this issue of how they feel that the proper analysis of the environmental impacts have not been completely evaluated in its entirety. And the AG has urged the INPC and the ESPB to start getting involved in this. And I actually spoke with the AG's office last Friday, and he's mentioned that both the council and the board have put this issue on the agenda for their next meeting.
The which board?
Sorry, the Endangered Species Protection Board.
Mm-hmm. Is that part of the AG's office?
It's part of the Natural Preserves Council.
Okay. And you're talking about Thomas Davis, I assume, chief of the Environmental Bureau.
Yes.
From what I've seen, the information he's sent to the IDNR, he's not particularly happy with the way they're proceeding, and he feels like they're circumventing some of the rules, the environmental rules that need to be addressed.
Yeah, I would agree.
At this point, there are still determinations to be made regarding the air and water. Is that correct? That more studies need to be done?
I'm not necessarily sure about studies, but basically Mississippi Sand needs to get a bunch of permits to be able to do this open pit sand mining. And so IDNR's permit via the Office of Mines and Minerals is kind of one of the big ones that they have to get, but they also need approval from the EPA as well. So Bureau of Water, Bureau of Air, because there's going to be discharge permits and there's going to be impacts to air quality as well.
So what is IEPA doing right now?
So I also spoke with IEPA on Friday just to get an update, and they're still reviewing comments from that public availability session.
Mm-hmm. Which was held in May, right?
Yes, May. Yeah, and I unfortunately was not able to attend this, but, you know, the Sierra Club did attend. Like, we had a representative attend, and she spoke extensively with a lot of people who were there, a lot of agencies who were there, and we also issued our own comment letter. So the public availability session happened in one day, and then there's a comment period afterwards where people can submit written comments, which ended June 7th, and the Sierra Club issued a letter that kind of reiterated all of our concerns.
And now, is that the letter that you refer to, that there was a – you mentioned in the update that you sent out – and by the way, we're talking to Tracy Yang, clean water organizer with the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. Sierra Club sent out a letter, which I got a hold of, which sort of outlines what's going on. It was about a DNR, you write here, DNR gave a one-page response to a detailed 10-page letter, which did not respond to the letter until July 3rd, which was almost 20 days after they had already approved the permit. So was that your letter that they were referring to, or some other letter?
So that letter that is being referred to right there is the citizen's complaint letter, which we sent out in March, actually.
All right.
So, yeah, so we sent it in March, and then we did not get that reply until the 3rd after July 3rd. And yeah, so that basically was a very extensive report where we covered, you know, wildlife, economic impacts, land value, historical and cultural value, as well as other factors like air pollution, water pollution, and all those other things. And yeah, it was a very extensive letter that we sent them. And when the response that we received back was, it was a one-page response, and it basically, it really only focused on two things. One, so in our complaint letter, we had two main points. The first was that we were urging DNR to consider the negative short and long-term impacts more extensively, and the second thing was we were requesting that they hold a public meeting, a public hearing,
mm-hmm.
Based on the Rivers, Lakes, and Streams Act. And basically, the mine will impact Horseshoe Creek, which runs in the property. And so we're hoping that under this act, we would be able to have a public hearing. And so DNR's reply was basically a very short response, and they basically said that they've assured us that they've taken the necessary considerations in the short and long-term impacts, and that they've they cannot hold a public hearing under this act because Horseshoe Creek is not listed as a public water, which is what this act covers.
But there are people who would claim differently, that because it runs through Starved Rock State Park.
Right. So, you know, Horseshoe Creek drains into Starved Rock, which eventually goes to Illinois River. Yes.
So there's at least a debate about that. But getting back to the way this letter was treated takes me back to my comment earlier that IDNR has not been transparent. You wrote the letter in March. They waited several months, and in the meantime, approved Mississippi Sands mining permit on June 15th. And then 20 days later, they sent you a response. That's not particularly transparent in my book. And they say they're not responsible for having a public hearing on this. Let's bring in somebody else, Tracy, because that's part of the water aspect of it. I want to bring in Stephen Penn, who's a part of Penn Rakowski. It's a law firm located in Racine, Wisconsin. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Great. And thank you for being on the show. And I'm a disclaimer here that Stephen is not associated formally with the effort here in Illinois regarding Starved Rock State Park. He's a guy who listens to the show and writes to me occasionally and says, hey, I've got some issues here, too. And your issue is with the silica sand that is going to be mined there. Tell me about your firm. What kind of cases do you handle in general?
Oh, thanks, Mike. We and amazingly, you pronounced my partner's last name correctly. It's often butchered, but you nailed it. So, in and of itself, I'm impressed with that.
He's a paisan, all right?
Actually, she is. So
oh, she? See, now I got that? Oh, my goodness. Oh, dear. Oh, I just blew it.
Well, I appreciate you, our chats and having me on. Our firm does... We concentrate in occupational lung disease, primarily asbestos, but I've had over the decades a chance to do work with foundry workers that have been exposed to silica sand and developed lung disease as well. So, you know, it's odd when you started the Starved Rock discussion and these silica mining, it's odd when something that esoteric, which is what we do, is out there up in front. And, you know, you certainly bring something to the table. Just from a perspective of public health. And I think that's something that in looking at all the materials and listening to all the conversation, I don't know how much play that's getting, and I would be concerned. Because that's what we do. I know it can have very devastating effects. So that's what we do, and that's why I'm somewhat interested in this topic.
And you did something very interesting for me, and you sent me the material safety data sheet, and some people might be aware of what that is. It's MSDS for short, and I see them all the time because I look at them in regard to chemicals that are used in horticulture and all kinds of products. And you sent me one, a link to the one from Mississippi Sand, and the product name is Frac Sand, which is quartz, silicon dioxide, or St. Peter's sandstone. And this is from 2008. And I want you to talk a little bit about that report. The thing that you said that really struck me was, where's the company? Oh, you said company websites are often the best evidence against them. And the point you're making is that you have to report this. This is public information. You have to report this. Government requires it. And so it's just often it's out there for anybody to see. And if people want to go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and just look where it says Material Safety Data Sheet, MSDS, for Mississippi Sand, LLC, and you'll see this. So what does that tell you looking at that MSDS?
It's interesting, Mike. The corporate websites, I think, in a way, are analogous to what you're seeing now with people with Facebook pages and whatnot. Those are invaluable sources of information. And when a company has a web, I always go to a company website when I'm litigating and see what they're saying, because really, what is it? They're putting their best foot forward for the customers to make money, to make business. And in fact, before I get to the MSDS, if you go to the quality and safety control page from Mississippi Sand. And I should say this, I've not had any litigation with this company. I have litigated with companies similar to this, but not with this specific company. But again, going to their website, if you look under the quality and safety control, and that page leads you to the MSDS, they say something interesting. They say, Mississippi Sand is committed to providing a safe environment for our employees, customers, contractors, and business partners. That's the focus of this company. They're not interested, or they're not saying that they're interested in safety and preservation of the environment, wildlife. That's not their stock in trade, and they're not interested in that. They want to get the customer's product as quickly as can. That's the business. So that page leads you to the MSDS sheet, and you're right. MSDS is an acronym for Material Safety Data Sheet, and OSHA has promulgated a requirement on these companies to put out, as you said, basically a description of what the product is and potential ill health effects from the product if you're exposed to it or you use it over periods of time. And as I've seen with many MSDS sheets that relate to silica-type sand, some of what you see here is scary stuff. They talk about chronic long-term health effects. And one should realize that silica, it's plentiful. And when you start grinding it and you start mining it and milling it down to these very fine particulates, you're giving off dust. And the worst dusts you can't even see. But silica dust, small enough, has been understood to be and long categorized as a class one carcinogen. It is a cancer-causing agent, and that comes from IARC, the International Agency for Research on Cancer. So the worldwide opinion of long-term exposure to fine silica particulate is, hey, you breathe this long enough, it can give you cancer. Along with myriad other things, silicosis, tuberculosis, we've seen that. So this is dangerous stuff, and when you start mining it and putting it into the air, generally that's a cause for concern.
Stephen, I'm going to read from the MSDS here. The long-term or chronic health effects, prolonged and repeated exposure to respirable crystalline silica-containing dust can cause silicosis, a lung disease, which can increase risks of pulmonary tuberculosis infection. Silicosis can be progressive and symptoms can appear at any time, even years after exposure has ceased. Symptoms may include, but not limited to, shortness of breath, difficulty breathing, coughing, diminished work capacity, diminished chest expansion, reduction of lung volume, and right heart enlargement or failure. Smoking may increase risk of developing lung disorders. Research also shows that there may be associations between excessive crystalline silica exposure and adverse health effects involving the kidney, scleroderma, which is thickening of the skin caused by swelling and thickening of fibrous tissue, and other autoimmune disorders. Respirable crystalline silica has also been listed by IARC and NTP as a, quote, known human carcinogen, as you just mentioned, and by the ACGIH as suspected human carcinogen. Crystalline silica is also considered a carcinogen by the state of California. That's amazing stuff.
I've seen all of it. I've seen those conditions in clients. I've had clients pass from that. It's scary stuff. And one tends to think of sand. I think the problem when one deals with sand is you think, you go out to the beach. Well, there's no harm there. You've got the play lot sand. What's the harm in that? And I would grant you there's really probably none. Those aren't fine enough. You're not in a fine enough respirable type. Silica, you really need to be grinding this down, mining it, and putting it into the air. And it's the fibers, Mike. It's the fibers you can't see to the naked eye. They get into the lungs. The lungs can't release them back, and disease develops after that. So it is scary stuff. And I think the reason I would be scared in the starved rock situation case is that you don't know what's going to happen here. You and I have talked about, Libby, if you know anything about Libby, Montana, there are what they call vermiculite mines, and vermiculite is a type of asbestos. And they just dug and dug and mined, and you had scores of people coming down with asbestos-related cancers and dying of those types of diseases because that was just generally in the air. And before they start mining, they need to look at this very carefully. What's the impact going to be on the people that live around the park? What's going to happen to the wildlife at that park? I'd be very concerned about that. You know, they do rat studies to show that thus and such causes cancer and they can do that. But it's a much smaller amount of a carcinogen that they give a rat than they give a person. So if we start putting Mississippi Sand starts putting this type of respirable silica into the air, what's the impact on the small lungs of birds or other wildlife? I'd be very concerned about that.
And Tracy, I would ask, are you taking notes right now? And I'm sure, Tracy, that this is something that, when you're talking about the air quality, these things come up as well, right?
Yeah, definitely. Air quality in terms of the blasting and the truck traffic is something that's definitely of concern.
That is Tracy Yang, Clean Water Organizer, Illinois Chapter of the Sierra Club, Stephen Penn with Penn Rakowski, and law firm based in Racine, Wisconsin. You're welcome to call in if you're listening, 773-763-9278, to weigh in on this. If you live in the area, if you don't live in the area, if you have some insight, if you have a question, 773-763-9278. Hang on, you two. I will get back to you in a second. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Summer has arrived, and for many gardeners, that means heat, drought, and watering bans. Help your landscapes thrive despite these seasonal challenges with proper care and Milorganite fertilizer. Hi, I'm gardening expert Melinda Myers. Mulch the soil with a layer of organic material to conserve moisture, reduce weeds, and improve the soil as it breaks down. Water plants thoroughly and less frequently whenever you irrigate the garden. This encourages deep roots, making your plants more drought tolerant and pest resistant. Water early in the day to reduce water loss to evaporation. And be sure to use Milorganite for all your summer fertilization needs. The organic nitrogen is slow release and won't burn plants even during drought. Milorganite remains in the soil until the conditions are right for plant growth, including your lawn, so there's no need to water it in. Plus, the 4% non-staining iron promotes deep green growth. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com for a garden center near you. That's MILORGANITE.com.
Thank you, Melissa Myers. Welcome to August, the month that separates the gardeners from the poseurs, mainly because the poseurs are all on vacation, probably in France, while the gardeners never take a vacation, like me. But if you pick up a copy of the July-August issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, you'll learn that pollinators also never take a vacation. And you'll also learn exactly what traits in a flower are particularly attractive to different pollinators. For instance, birds like flowers that are scarlet, orange, red, or white. Butterflies go for bright red and purple, but beetles like white or green. Huh. Didn't know that. As for scents, bees like fresh, mild, and pleasant, while bats like it strong and musty. And they must be emitted at night. Well, big fat duh. Then there's my column on the inside back page. It's always a big fat duh, but some humans are strangely attracted to it. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town. Or get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Glad to have you with us on a Sunday morning, a beautiful Sunday morning in Chicago. In the future, maybe not so beautiful for folks who live near Starved Rock State Park, want to visit the state park. I notice we've got some tweets coming in at a question in Stephen Penn. One of the tweeters asked, is the information, and I think she's referring to the how it affects animal life. Is it in the MSDS? It gets to some of that. I know that in terms of some of the MSDSs out there, especially for pesticides and that sort of thing, and herbicides, they do talk about how it affects birds, amphibians, fish, that sort of thing. I don't think this particular one does.
Yeah, Mike, for the tweeter, just to understand the genesis of this, MSDSs were promulgated by OSHA for workplace safety and then became used by end users. So Mississippi Sand would have this in their facility for their employees' education as well as their users, so the end user that might buy some of the frac sand would get this as well. It's geared towards human safety, but your tweeter is correct in that when IARC determined that and ACGIH determined that these were class one carcinogens, most of that initially came from animal studies, and then later on were either extrapolated or developed through epidemiology studies to people. So while it doesn't necessarily, and this one in particular, doesn't necessarily address that in wildlife, it got its start in animal studies. I can tell you that historically that's how that developed.
Mm-hmm. And Tracy, you started to bring up something that I think is important too, which is, and that's Tracy Yang from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. There's a lot more than just draining a wetland, and these are lands that are considered significant in Illinois. There's trucks, there's noise, there's as we mentioned, the air and the silica sand. There's all of this, Are you able to bring that into your arguments, or are you limited more or less to how does it affect this this water quality or that air quality?
So in the comment letter that we submitted to the to IEPA after mm-hmm. the public availability session, it was kind of an extensive letter that covered a lot of our concerns, but. With regards to the air and water quality, we basically were trying to request to have site-specific requirements a site-specific requirement permit.
Mm-hmm.
And, so right now, you know, EPA is considering kind of these more general NPDES and air pollution control permits, and we're asking for something a little bit more specific than that. For them to consider making Mississippi Sand have to apply for. And then on top of that, we've also urged the EPA to consider establishing a monitoring program for both water and air, and hopefully that would start before any mining would take place so that we could get a baseline standard and, you know, that we could be able to – so that we could be able to document any sort of changes to either quality and be able to, you know, help – minimize any impacts that would happen from this.
And if you did the air and water study, obviously you have to have some time to do that, I would think. It would slow down the process.
Time and money. I'm not too sure about that, but it would definitely would need, you know, a couple, at least, you know, several data points, you know, where we could establish that baseline.
So all in all, where do we stand right now? What are the next steps? I know one of the things that I've done is I put the information on my website where people can contact Governor Pat Quinn, Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon. It doesn't sound right now, and perhaps you can correct me on this, Tracy, that they've been particularly involved in this at this point.
I'm sorry,
Either Pat Quinn or Sheila Simon. It sounds like so far they've pretty much kept their hands off of this thing.
So I can't speak for Quinn, but I do know that the Lieutenant Governor's office via the Illinois River Coordinating Council is they have been very closely keeping tabs on this, and I would specifically note Daphne Mitchell and Dick Worthen of this council who have kind of kept this issue in the spotlight mm-hmm. for the Coordinating Council. And I just got an email talking about the IRCC on August 7th is going to be holding a call in which, you know, they're going to discuss the impacts. Like, I think a while ago we had sent a bunch of questions to a bunch of different agencies, and now that they have responses, they're going to convene and talk about this and consider if the council should take action against Mississippi Sand and this project in general. And I know that the Sierra Club is planning to attend this.
Okay. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I actually got an email from Daphne Mitchell also at IRCC about this. And the other name I have there on the site is Michael Woods, who's the director of the Office of Mines and Management. This is something that you can do, Mines and Minerals, and you can call as well. I've got the numbers. I guess the point here is keep the pressure on and let people know that they are concerned and that we really haven't. And I'm encouraged by the Attorney General's office getting involved. Stephen, that's something that you seemed encouraged by as well.
Yeah, you know, Mike, boy, you were reading my mind. I read through the correspondence that you sent me, and it was disheartening, but to see Tom Davis's letters to the various agencies was really encouraging. He's considering issuing a writ of mandamus, basically going into court and seeking an injunction if these procedures, these reviews aren't followed. And if I could just take one second, Mike, when I read through one of his letters, as just a person that appreciates the fact that we have these state parks, Tom cites the Illinois Natural Areas Protection Act, and he says, quote, I just think this is so important for people to keep in mind. He said natural lands are, quote, living museums of the native landscape wherein one may envision and experience primeval conditions in a wilderness-like environment. Living museums. If we lose that, game over. You can't open the museum once it's gone. And it's so critically important that it's not business as usual. I'm very encouraged by Mr. Davis's comments, and I think to the extent that people find him and write him letters of encouragement, he is the state's attorney general. That's encouraging, and I think that gives him firepower as well. I wouldn't leave that out of the mix either, because he certainly seems to be a champion of this effort.
Well, he's not the attorney general himself. That would be Lisa Madigan. But yes, he's in the office. I'm going to encourage you. Oh, and by the way, Stephen, you know about this. You work in Racine, but you live in Illinois.
Correct. Yeah, we work in both states. My office is physically there, but I've got work out near the state park. Correct.
Oh, okay. And you've probably seen, well, and I've read stories about how folks are fighting efforts to open up landmines near sensitive areas there as well.
Absolutely. The very same. And unfortunately, though, and I don't need to tell you or your listeners, it's not nearly as friendly a forum for the advocates of the Sierra Clubs and the folks that really care about the environment. But those fights are going on, absolutely.
Yeah, well, then I guess what we do is we call Wisconsin a cautionary tale as we move forward with the starved rock problem.
Correct.
Well, thank you so much, Stephen R. Penn from Penn Rakowski, for reaching out to me and for agreeing to be on the show. You had some wonderful information. Tracy, you're obviously, we're going to stay in touch, and we're going to follow this all the way to the end, whether it's a bitter end or a successful ending. I'm hoping that sanity prevails.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, thank you both, and you have a great Sunday.
You too.
Bye. The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I would say to you, if you listen, if you love Starved Rock State Park, and 2 million people do and go there every year, what we're told is that 39 jobs will be created, around 39. We don't know exactly how many, but about 39 jobs in that area. Versus the 2 million people who visit the park each year, and all of the wildlife in the park and around the park and in the streams that are going to be affected by this. The human beings, the folks who live in the area, we're going to have the trucks in the dust, the disruption to their lives, which I'm not sure they quite get at this point. And it's just a matter of, do we have to mine every place? Do we have to take every mineral out of the earth? Really? Do we really have to do that? Do we have to chop down every tree? Do we have to just put our dirty little fingerprints, human fingerprints, on everything on this planet? Really? That's all I got to say about that. All right. Come back and the latest episode from Green on McLean, Denny, and the Pumpkin Patch. The Pumpkin Patch continues to be an area of concern. And I'll talk with Denny about that right after.
That was a pumpkin tease.
That was, yeah.
That was good. I think it might be the first.
Could be. Could very well be. All right, and I'm noticing here, well, let's do this, and we'll be back in a sec.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. A client from Chicago asked whether tree roots only go out as far as the branches on trees. The biggest root is the one that goes straight down into the ground, right? Not so much. It's a common misconception that tree roots only extend as far out as the branches on a tree, commonly referred to the drip line, referred to as the drip line. In fact, they reach much farther out than that. And they're found basically in the top 12 inches of the soil, not one long root that goes deep into the earth. Or, you know, you don't see taproots on trees. Keep this in mind when you are considering construction around your home or office, such as building a deck or extension. It might seem as the construction is far enough from the tree to actually damage. You might not think that there's going to be damage, but you don't know because you don't necessarily know where the tree roots are. Just assume they're going out quite a ways. And that if you're doing that kind of construction, you could damage it. I saw last week when one of these storms came through, was I forget exactly where, and it was a tree that was in a parkway and that had been blown over. And what was really interesting about the roots, because you could see the tree had been uprooted and now the roots are right there above ground, where the curb was, you could see the line of the roots. It's, you know, the roots trying to get past the curb. And there was just this straight line. But the rest of the places where there was soil and lawn, the roots were extending out. And they actually make that noise when they extend. They go, brrr. I don't know if you realize that.
I was wondering.
I know. Anyway, you should invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Are you passionate about fitness, nutrition, personal growth, or living a sustainable lifestyle? Natural Awakenings magazine is your local guide to a healthier, greener, and more balanced life. Each monthly issue includes timely articles about nutrition, alternative and holistic medicine, fitness for your body and mind, healthy pets, recipes, an extensive events calendar, and more. Natural Awakenings is available across Chicago and in the north and northwest suburbs. Get your free copy at wellness and fitness centers, health food and grocery stores, coffee shops, libraries, and wherever free publications are found. Or visit us online at www.nachicagonorth.com. Advertisers, Natural Awakenings magazine is the perfect way to reach health-conscious and green readers looking for businesses just like yours. Call 847-858-3697 today to learn more about advertising opportunities. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
I don't know what's wrong with me today. I'm just, the music is all over the map.
Yeah, I feel like I'm at a theme park right now.
And for some people, it's a water theme park, like me, in my basement. And for some people, it's a no power theme park.
Yeah.
Where you have to...
Horrible theme, by the way.
A horrible thing?
A horrible theme, no power.
Yeah, that would be a bad choice for a theme park, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, you come into the park, there's no power. You got to do everything yourself, everything you want to do. We'll make you run in a treadmill, and that powers sort of everything, and all the rides are, they're like, the rides in a theme park like that are teeter-totters,
yeah,
a swing, a merry-go-round that you push yourself. That's the no-power theme park. Oh, dear.
Well, playground.
Well, remember last week, I was telling you about my community garden, Green on McLean.
And a pumpkin saga going on.
The pumpkin saga. And last week, we had this beautiful, beautiful pumpkin that was just, it was the first one of the season, okay? And here's the way the thing works with pumpkins, and you're growing pumpkins in a pumpkin patch. And veterans of this know this, but newbies might not, that there's two kinds of flowers. There's the male flower and this female flower. And early in the season, the male flower There's lots of male flowers. In fact, early in the season, it's kind of interesting. We had a woman come by who didn't speak English very well. And gosh, what a surprise in my neighborhood. But she wanted to harvest the male flowers. And we didn't quite understand what she was asking. It was actually Kathleen had dealt with her and didn't quite get it. And, you know, and then we went, you know, to check things out and realized, oh, yeah, that's a delicacy. You can put these in a dish. And we felt bad because she never came back. So I go, no, you can take the male flowers. It's fine. And then what happens is the female flowers start to develop, and they are different from, and you'll see this on cucurbits of any kind, where the male flowers like on a long stem, and bam, there's a flower right on the end of it. But the female stem is a lot shorter, and it has a little bulb. It's closer to the stem, to the vine actually, and it has a little bulb on it. And if the flower gets pollinated, then that bulb will turn into a pumpkin or a squash or something like that. And after a while, it's pretty easy to identify them. Now, there's a number of things that happen. Is early on, you don't get a lot of them. And so we had this pumpkin come out early, and it was like this rogue female flower decided to go early. It started to develop in this beautiful pumpkin, and we were like, yay! And then we had a couple more develop, and I came to the garden last week, and the pumpkin was gone. So we went, okay, some idiot stole this, thought it was a watermelon, and they're going to take it home, and it's going to be useless mm-hmm. to them, unless they just like stealing things, and that's a possibility. In fact, our friend Libby, who's one of the people working in the garden, said, put up a sign that said, if you're going to steal pumpkins, wait until the fall. Because they don't do you any good, or it doesn't do you any good right now. I love her sign. I've got to get a photo of that sign and put it on my website. And I'm thinking of putting big signs that say, smile, you're on camera. I don't know if it'll do any good. But
because they wouldn't be on camera?
Yeah, so because what happened is we lost the first big pumpkin, but there was pumpkin number two.
All right.
And so we covered it with mulch to hide it.
Nice.
Okay, and it's under the leaves of the pumpkin patch, and we cover it with mulch, and yesterday I went out there and that was gone.
You're kidding.
No.
Wow. It has to be a human that's done it, right?
Oh, yeah. Because you got to snap off that. No animal did this. An animal might take a chunk out of it, but animals are smarter than humans. They know the pumpkin's not ripe.
So
we've got three or four more pumpkins starting to develop because we get more. Once the weather cools a little bit, that's another thing. It's hard for some of these plants to pollinate. In you know, when the temperature is above 95, they're not going to do anything for you. Okay, but now we're getting lots of cucumbers. We're getting squash. We got like four or five pumpkins now, and I'm thinking, are we going to get all of them stolen? And you know, Kathleen's like, I told you so. I told you we shouldn't plant pumpkins because they're all going to get stolen because we don't have a gate. We got a sort of a snow fence, but it's not. It's not meant to stop people. It's meant to keep the trash from blowing in from the alley.
There could be a chance that this person, this pumpkin bandit, if you will.
The pumpkin bandit.
May listen to this show, and they're trying to get some publicity, I think. It could be possible.
I don't think so.
Oh, they're talking about me again. Yes.
No. No, nobody's that desperate for publicity. I'm sorry. So what I should do is have people write me and tell me what you do. Because I know that in other gardens there's issues with people stealing food. It's part of having a community garden. And we've lost some tomatoes, and I don't know. The problem is I'm not in the garden every day, and I'm certainly not there in the middle of the night and at 6 a.m. or whatever.
Neighborhood Garden Watch.
Neighborhood Garden Watch. There's not much you can do. I think some of our tomatoes have been taken. And I'm hoping that it's the people working in the garden. If that's the case, fine. But our people in the garden were not going to steal a pumpkin that was green.
Mm-mm.
That makes no sense. So if folks have an idea You know, I'm thinking like a bear trap, maybe, because there's lots of leaves. You just hide it there under the leaves, and somebody comes. And so if I come there in the morning and some guy's leg is caught in a bear trap, I think that's the guy.
Yeah, you'll have serious issues if you do that.
Like people, what are you talking about?
People come to find you.
I have no idea what you're talking about. Well, issues. What kind of issues?
Do it. We'll see what happens. It'll be a good story for next
week. Or maybe we get one of those exploding ink things with the when you have money.
There you go.
So somebody reaches down to grab a pumpkin and blah, they get. We're going to opt for the less violent approach simply because Denny, you don't work in the garden. You get violent after a while. You go to the dark side because it's the Dark Mike Rises. That's our show for today.